Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. Part two. I was going to say part, then pot. I'm trying to get them all words done correctly. Of the NBA's potluck season preview extravaganza. Part one, you can listen to over at the Open Floor feed. That was coverage of the Western Conference prior to this season. Part two is the Eastern Conference. I'm joined, as always, by Howard Beck and a collection of people from the Open Floor podcast: Chris Herring, Michael Pina, and Rohan Nadkarni. Gentlemen, we picked a very good day to record a podcast. Interesting day to record a podcast. The Ben Simmons situation in Philadelphia has officially gone nuclear. The Sixers suspending Ben Simmons on Tuesday for conduct detrimental to the team. Now, I want everybody to weigh in on this, but I do want to kind of run through the timeline of the last week or so to kind of set it up. Last week, Simmons ended his two-week holdout by just showing up at the Sixers facility, unbeknownst to anyone, while the team was playing a preseason game. On Sunday, Simmons returned to Sixers practice. Not much came out of that. Doc Rivers talked about some conditioning issues. Very light. On Monday, a video surfaced when media was allowed into the practice facility of Simmons practicing with his cell phone in his pocket. Now, I reached out to a half dozen or so assistant coaches, NBA coaches, to ask if that was normal in any way. I was told absolutely not by every one of them. So that kind of made some waves regarding the Simmons situation. On Tuesday, Simmons was thrown out of practice early, reportedly for refusing to participate in a defensive drill. Soon after, he was suspended for that season opener against New Orleans. Before we weigh in on this, I want to play what Joel Embiid had to say on Tuesday after practice.
But at the end of the day, our job is not to babysit somebody. We here, we get paid to put just on the court, go out, play hard, win some games. That's all we get paid for. We don't get paid to come out here and, try to babysit somebody. So that's not our job, and I'm sure my teammates feel that way.
All right, Chris Herring, I will start with you. Your reaction to the latest twist in the Simmons drama.
I guess it's actually me being surprised that Ben Simmons wasn't opting out of an offensive drill as opposed to a defensive one. So,
damn.
I mean, in a nutshell, it makes a lot of sense if we're surmising all this and we're saying, well, he doesn't really want to be there. He still doesn't really want to be there, but he wants his money. So what's the best way that you can kind of accomplish, you know, what airline was that? The want to get away feature along
that
with
that would
the,
be Southwest. That would be Southwest.
Okay. So there, I should know that. That's basically all I fly. So anyway, to activate that feature, but also to get your money too. I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a way to get that done. Maybe this is a way to get it done, but damn, like, I don't know what it does for your trade value. Maybe he wants to hurt the Sixers on the way out in that regard too. I don't know, but it's, yeah, at this point, I was of the opinion maybe you can still patch this up, make this work. Everybody's a little bit bruised. I guess we're past that point. But I think in some ways the Sixers, I know how important Simmons is. I feel like they could still be pretty good, but this is, I don't see a universe in which they can coexist anymore. Obviously, this was probably the last salvo that could really be fired in that regard.
Michael, so, I was curious. I'll throw it to you, Mike. I was curious how Simmons was going to handle all this. Like, was he going to come in and play hard and, you know, turn it around quick? Because I thought there was a scenario where he could have turned the tide, so to speak. I thought he could have won back the fans quickly if they started winning games and he was playing well. The alternative kind of was this, to take sort of the James Harden approach and just be indifferent to what's going on down there.
Yeah, I mean, this is a... I thought this was very predictable. It's a page out of the Jimmy Butler, James Harden, as you said, playbook, except, I mean, number one, Ben Simmons is not as good as either of those guys, and he doesn't have the cachet, despite the All-Star appearances and All-NBA appearances and Defensive Player of the Year, runner-up, wherever he finished last year. He doesn't have the same cachet or the clout as those guys to pull off something like this. And at least with Jimmy and James, you kind of knew their motivations clearly. Jimmy Butler was a little miffed that some of his younger, less accomplished teammates were getting paid by the organization and the Minnesota Timberwolves were not giving him the max extension that he desired. And James Harden just wanted to win a championship, and he knew that that just wasn't going to happen with the Houston Rockets. But with Simmons, it's like he's already on a contender. They finished first in the Eastern Conference last season, and primarily the reason they didn't advance to the conference finals was his own shortcomings as a basketball player, and he's already on a max contract for the next 4 years. So it's just, it's very bizarre. It's not a good look for him. He's getting bad advice, frankly, from whoever is giving it to him, in my opinion. And I don't...
Do you think, Mike, do you think he's getting bad? Like, I can't fathom this being a strategy. Like, say what you want about Rich Paul, but I can't believe he'd say, all right, stay away, and then when you get back, act like a complete jackass. Like, I don't know, that's... Like, anyone who's been around this game could have foreseen that the Sixers, who had a $8 million lump payment that they were supposed to pay Ben Simmons, weren't going to give it to him days after he didn't show up. Like, if the timing had been different, if, like, training camp was supposed to open on Monday and the payment was supposed to come on Sunday, maybe. But after he sat out games, why, or practices, why would they pay him? Like, this to me screams just Ben Simmons feeling like he can find a way to force his way out of there.
No, I mean, you make a really good point. I do want to applaud him for the cell phone in the pocket look. Because that's just, you know, you got money to spend when you're willing to just let your cell phone fall out of your pocket and just smash on the ground repeatedly. So shout out to him for that move. I thought that was a little ingenious. But you're right, Chris. This isn't, maybe I misspoke when I said that he was getting advice. Because you're right. It's just like, there's no clear through line here for his actions and his behavior, and it's just not a good look at all. It's embarrassing.
Let me just point out real quick that NBA players, all of them, have multiple phones. So there's the primary one that's the important one, the people you really want to be able to get a hold of you. Then you got the one that the number you give out to people that you really don't care about, and that's the number you're going to change in 3 weeks anyway. That's the phone he had in his pocket. That's the burner that he just doesn't give a crap about.
You're saying that was the one for the plug, Howard. You're saying that was the...
I'm saying it's the phone number that he gave you, Rohan.
Does he think that he's going to get traded, Rohan? Like during practice? Like what? I don't get the point. Like I had another exec text me while we're recording this, be like, he called it atypical to have for a guy to have a phone in his pocket. So I don't know why you would have it other than to like see it show up on camera, like to
right.
have exactly what happened.
He is throwing every play in the playbook he has at the Sixers. It's, I'm going to stay away. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm not going to show up to a meeting. I'm going to surprise show up. I'm going to attend practice. I'm going to be a jackass in practice. I'm going to have my phone. He's going full Andrew Bynum. He's going, you know, everything that he can throw at the Sixers, he's throwing at them. But let me turn this around on Philly just a little bit. Because I don't think, listen, I'm not going to excuse Ben Simmons' behavior. I think, in general, I like players who want to play where they want to play, et cetera. That doesn't bother me. There's a level of professionalism you owe your teammates that if anybody shows up to a workplace and starts acting like that, there are other people who depend on you, et cetera. That's not
acceptable. Here comes the butt. Here comes the butt.
No, I just want to say, at what point does Philly regret not taking one of these deals out there for him? You know, we had the round of extensions come in before the deadline on Monday, and Malcolm Brogdon extended with the Pacers. He's now ineligible to be traded this season. Are you really telling me? I mean, look at Philly last year. They were a game away from the conference finals, and that was with Simmons making them play 4-on-5 in the fourth quarter, and they were still that close to the conference finals. You're telling me that team last year with Malcolm Brogdon and Caris LeVert couldn't have made the NBA Finals? I when you have a presence like Joel Embiid, you know, I understand the Sixers being like, we need a second superstar, et cetera. I think Embiid is such a unique force that at some point they have to, I'm looking at Philly like, why didn't you cut your losses with this guy? I understand Daryl Morey, you know, doesn't want to get fleeced on a trade here, but I'm just looking at how close they were to the finals last year, and I'm like, yeah, if they had Brogdon and Caris LeVert, two guys who are not going to stop them from, you know, running BS offense in the fourth quarter of a playoff game, that's going to make a huge difference. So I'm not saying that Philly's handled it wrong, because Simmons, I think, is at this point, it's fair to say this is just unprofessional, but I'm a little surprised they haven't cut their losses.
Let me just jump in to say one thing, because I mentioned this to Chris offline earlier. I'm not convinced that this is some great, clever Machiavellian maneuver by Ben Simmons in the mold of James Harden. And as you guys have already pointed out, James Harden and Jimmy Butler at another level. Like, they can pull this crap. Also, that's totally in Jimmy Butler's personality to do what he was doing in Minnesota. In Harden's case, you know, I mean, shit, the guy's an MVP. He's like, he could afford to just kind of blow off training camp and be seen in at parties and strip clubs, wherever the heck he was. Ben Simmons hasn't accomplished anything. Ben Simmons also has a personality that we've seen over and over through these years that indicates that he's kind of prone to pouting. Like, I'm not so sure that this was Ben Simmons creating more discomfort for the club to hasten a trade that ain't coming until Daryl Morey's ready anyway. Like, nothing he does is going to do it, and in fact, is all counterproductive. But this strikes me as just being more Ben Simmons kind of being kind of pouty and passive aggressive and just kind of the strange character that he is. Like, I don't think there was anything clever or manipulative about it. He's just, you know, he's just immature.
Herring, have we reached the point of no return for Ben Simmons? Because it's one thing to not show up for a couple of weeks in an effort to get traded. It's quite another to show up and just go through the motions on a team that has eyes on winning a championship. You can say they're not championship caliber, but they were the number one seed last year. They've got some improved players on that roster, presumably Tyrese Maxey and some of the younger guys. Embiid is a front runner to win MVP. Like, can Ben Simmons go back now after sleepwalking through at least two practices that we know of?
No. I mean, I think today was kind of the last straw, just because there was already a lot of fracturing there. I mean, I still can't really remember a time where somebody was as pretty clear. You know, I guess it wasn't a clear, definitive opinion he gave, but that was enough of an opinion. When Doc said, "I don't know," in response to that question about whether they could win a title with Ben Simmons as the point guard. Once you say that, that cat is hard to get back in the bag. But particularly today, I think Embiid had actually been pretty diplomatic about it up till now. But today, when he said, "I don't care about this dude," it's hard to figure out whether he said, "I don't care about that man," with like a comma in between, or if he said, "I don't care about that man." But regardless of what he said,
I replayed it. There's no pause.
There's no pause. I'll have to ask Joel if he wants to like insert a comment in there. Yeah. You know, if he gets the edit feature that Twitter doesn't have. But it's hard to kind of take that back. And to some extent, that did feel real. You could tell Joel had been kind of walking on eggshells a little bit. The idea that the Sixers tried to have whatever you want to call it, a little reconciliation to get Ben to come back to Philly. Or to go out there to meet him, and Ben is, with all the phones he has, is hiding his phones so that they can't text him to say that. Whatever it was, there was a moment, and I think that moment certainly has passed. If it hadn't yesterday, then it did today, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned what Doc said, and Doc has tried to spin it since then, saying he didn't say what he said. We all know he said what he said. But Pete even Duck. If he meant exactly what he said, I feel like it... You got to be a really sensitive guy to for that to be the overwhelming thing that makes you want to leave that team. And I grew up in Boston where Larry Bird, during a finals,
you're from Boston?
Once called his teammates a bunch of women. It just exposes a real sensitivity to Ben Simmons if your coach kind of takes a shot after you have a god awful second round series and one of the bigger gaffes we've seen in recent playoff memory, not since J.R. Smith refusing to shoot at the rim, have we seen a shot that point blank being passed upon. I mean, I don't know. I had someone text me earlier today who said, someone that's an executive has been monitoring that situation, who said, if this is how this guy reacts when things get tough, who wants him? Because things are going to get tough once again. And how is Ben Simmons going to respond in a different situation? He goes somewhere else. Does that automatically make him mentally tougher? I don't think so. I think teams are looking at this and, you can see Ben Simmons' trade value kind of cratering in real time.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ron.
Well, I'll just add in the history of the league, you don't often see guys come back from this, right? Bynum's obviously a whole different case with his injury history, et cetera. But when he blew up at a Sixers practice and was only pulling up for threes, he never made it back in the league. I mean, look at a guy like Rajon Rondo. I mean, he really had to slowly work his way back in the league after he had those awkward exits from Dallas and Sacramento.
How dare you compare Rajon Rondo to Ben Simmons?
Oh, sorry. Jeez, two Louise. Tall point guards who can't shoot. You're right.
But one played well in the playoffs.
I will say this. someone's obviously going to take a chance on him because of his talent, but you're right. A team that acquires him, let's say he does go to Portland and that McCollum for Simmons swap everyone talks about, that we've all talked about, is he going to mesh with Damian Lillard? I mean, Damian Lillard's, I think, one of the mentally toughest players in the league. The opposite of what Simmons is in the fourth quarter is Damian Lillard. Is he going to mesh with him? What superstar is going to want to trust this guy as their running mate or second option in a playoff series when the going gets tough? We've mentioned it. He hasn't built the cachet around the league like a Jimmy Butler or James Harden have, et cetera. Players, I think, even have to be taking notice at this point and being why would we want to – hitch our hopes to this guy who just will kind of give up at any moment.
Howard, let me put a button in this, Howard, to you. What does Daryl Morey do now? Ben Simmons is clearly challenging Daryl Morey to move him sooner rather than later. We all know, everybody in the league knows, that Daryl doesn't want to do that. He wants to wait and see what happens in Portland. He wants to wait and see what happens in Washington. And he's right. The landscape could change very quickly in the NBA when it comes to the status of superstar players. Given the current situation, what do you think Morey's going to do?
The whole point of the exercise for Daryl Morey and that front office and ownership there as well, because they've obviously had a huge investment and a lot at stake here. The whole point of the exercise was get to the season. Wait for the landscape to change. In the offseason, everybody thinks they're fine. Some more than others, maybe. But you have to start playing games and losing games for the market to change, for the demand for Ben Simmons to get higher. And in the meantime, Ben Simmons is doing everything possible to screw his market value and make teams more wary of him or wary of giving up too many assets on the premise that he's their new franchise star or co-star. But the landscape has not changed, and the premise for Daryl Morey and the Sixers has not changed. Wait for the season to start. Lo and behold, here we are. We're hours away from opening night tip-off. So this is not the time for anybody to change their position or panic, and they're not going to. There's no way that Ben Simmons pouting through a practice and getting suspended for a game is going to change how the front office views this. Check back in 2 weeks, a month. Wait for somebody to go on a 7-game bender. Then we'll know, because the landscape will have changed. The market will have changed. The demand for Ben Simmons somewhere in the league will have gotten higher, and Daryl Morey will perhaps find the deal that he's looking for.
Yeah, I had someone text me who's close to the Sixers organization who said Ben Simmons, I read this correctly, Ben Simmons could do push-ups and sit-ups in his driveway like T.O., and they're still not going to trade him right now. So I think the resolve is strong in that Sixers front office, at least for now. So I don't know how this ends in the coming days. I just can't imagine Simmons coming back onto that practice floor after behaving the way he did over the last couple of practices. I just can't see it kind of shaping up. All right, let's move on to the top tier of the Eastern Conference. Michael Pina, I'll phrase it kind of like this. If I gave you the Nets or the field to win the NBA championship this season, who would you take?
Nets, without hesitation. They have the best player in the world. They have their second best player could win MVP easily. He's already done it, and he's, you know, his former GM Daryl Morey, who we were just talking about, has called him the best one-on-one offensive player in the history of the NBA. And he's, last year when he was healthy, James Harden was as good as ever, frankly. Those two also have tremendous chemistry on and off the court together. But even beyond KD and James Harden, I'm not even going to talk about Kyrie because he's just out of the picture and it doesn't even matter and it doesn't factor into my response to this, but they have like exceptional role players around these guys. I mean, Patty Mills is a wonderful, not only a wonderful culture presence for a locker room that's going through it right now, which Brooklyn is, but he's one of the best, if not the best, backup point guards in the entire NBA. You have Blake Griffin. You have Joe Harris, who led the NBA in three-point percentage last year. You have LaMarcus Aldridge. Howard, I believe you picked him to be the sixth man of the year this season. Paul Millsap, KG veteran. Like, I love all the pieces that they've retained and that they've brought in. Plus, they're going to be maybe the number one destination for talented players who are waived later on in the season, players who want to get that ring. So, like, I feel like the whole NBA is orbiting Brooklyn right now. And if KD stays healthy, if Harden stays healthy, it's just their title to lose.
I'm going to jump in to disagree just on this premise. If it's the Nets or the field, I'm taking the field, just because what we thought of the Nets as this overwhelming offensive juggernaut that we saw for all of 8 games last season when those three were actually together, is not quite that. KD and Harden alone might be an offensive juggernaut, and with the cast that Pina, that you just listed off, if Kyrie Irving never existed and we just saw on paper Kevin Durant and James Harden, even at this stage of their careers, with that supporting cast at their stage of their careers, we'd still think it was a really, really good team. But far and away title favorite, I can't get there. And especially in a league where, look, the Bucks obviously are the defending champs. The Sixers will eventually figure out this Ben Simmons situation and still have Joel Embiid, who is an MVP waiting to happen. You've got plenty of other teams in the East that are at least in striking distance, and a bunch of pretty good teams out West. Like, you know, the West, that we've talked about it on the open floor pod, it's a jumble, but there are enough really talented teams that also have at least two stars, where the Nets, yes, their two stars may be better, but they don't have that third star now to put them over the top that puts the serious distance between them and the field. So to me, the Nets are still favored and I picked them, but if it's Nets versus the field, I think I take the field.
Listen, I don't know if it's because we both are, you know, listening to the National, but I'm feeling an extra special connection to Howard the last couple of days because I'm going to agree with him one more time. I'm going to agree with him one more time. I'm with you. Listen, they would have been the runaway favorites with Kyrie. I don't think it would have been close, but that gap is way smaller now. And to Howard's point, you know, with their defense the way it is, without having Kyrie, I think it makes a big difference. I mean, just think of another rematch with the Bucks. I know like a few months ago we were firing Mike Budenholzer, so maybe this is a little bit of an overreaction, but who is guarding who for the Nets? I mean, are they going to survive with Blake Griffin guarding Giannis again, a more confident version of Giannis? Are they going to survive? Who guards Joel Embiid for them? Who's their perimeter stopper? I mean, Patty Mills, I think, is a solid defender to have in your starting lineup, but he's not guarding scoring wings. And I think their defense now becomes way bigger of a problem without Kyrie because that offensive margin for error is a lot smaller than it is with him on the floor. And I think the idea that they're going to go out there and outscore everyone is a little bit more unrealistic now because at some point in the playoffs, they're going to need to get stops. And I think if you look at their best five players, whoever they put on the floor, there's just going to be such a massive hole there defensively. And I think other teams, frankly, other contenders just have better two-way options in that regard. So I if it's Nets or the field, I'm also taking the field because I think that their margin of error is a lot smaller now than it was when they had Kyrie.
I would say this, though, before Herring, you jump in. Like, their defense in the playoffs wasn't bad. Like, it was actually pretty good statistically. So they may have sucked early in the season defensively, but they got it going a little bit later on. And I think that defense is going to be a little bit better with Aldridge backstopping that front line right now.
So, yeah, I mean, last year when they already had Kyrie and KD and there was talk of them wanting to potentially add Harden, I was like, they don't need to do that. It will make them so powerful up top but maybe make them weak as far as their depth and everything else that it's not worth that. Then you watch them play. And I remember saying, you know, I just don't have enough faith in this defense. And then they went and they added guys off the scrap heap. And then they went and reinforced. And Blake Griffin was a better fit than I think most of us imagined he would be. Aldridge is there. They went and got Patty Mills, who I still think is one of the best pickups of the offseason. I like them more now than I did last year. And they proved me wrong last year, by the way. They had so much offense that the defense generally didn't matter. And the defense looked better than I thought it would. So the fact that they look better, in some ways you feel even stronger about their position as the favorite. But I'm going to disagree with Michael on this one, too.
You're going to be wrong, too, Herring?
I just think, look, man, Milwaukee is going to be good. And Milwaukee's hopefully not going to have the injury questions that I feel like we're just going to have until Brooklyn pushes through and wins the thing. Quite frankly, Kyrie not being there, I think, certainly takes them down a peg. If for no other reason, because it to me, the usage and everything else, it seemingly increases the likelihood that maybe KD or Harden will go a little bit too harder, that they'll need them a little bit too much at times. And I, you know, it's not a problem that you want to have. So I'm just going to say that the whole field, including Milwaukee and everybody else, I would rather have that. Right now, I think that something fluky could happen. I think something weird could happen. There's an injury history there in Brooklyn. There are guys that, you know, that are useful off the bench, including Blake and certainly Aldridge, have had reasons that they haven't been able to play at times. So it's just a team. They do have more depth. They do have some real athleticism, too, in some of their younger guys and guys through the draft. But I would rather have the field, I think.
I want to throw two quick extra points here, though. One is, obviously, we're all talking as if there is no Kyrie at all, and there's always the possibility, of course, that somehow the law changes, Kyrie gets the shot, whatever, maybe he comes back. But in the absence of that, we've all joked about, or the whole world has joked about, the Lakers' age issues. Look at the Nets, not just the two stars, but like Blake Griffin and all the miles on him, Paul Millsap and all the miles on him, LaMarcus Aldridge, all the miles on him, and coming back after, you know, initially thinking he had to retire due to heart issues, and it's great to see him back, but again, a lot of miles, and he's having to like get his body back into condition again. So like the Nets have plenty of those age issues too. And so there's just a lot of volatility there. And having Kyrie, look, that's $35 million. Okay. That's a third, almost a third of the salary cap. $35 million that Kyrie Irving is just dead money right now. It's as if they, you know, cut him and had to just eat the salary cap hit. that's $35 million that if it were spent somewhere other way, you'd have multiple useful players that they don't have. And so it's just important to like consider that context too.
Well, I do think they have more they've got some better younger players, I think, than the Lakers have. I mean, I think Nick Claxton,
I like Claxton.
Shows he's useful. Bruce Brown is useful.
Sure.
Maybe it doesn't translate to the regular season, but Cam Thomas showed me a lot more than I expected from him in some of these preseason games. So they've got some guys there. I also point out, and Pina, you made this point, like they're going to be players on the buyout market. And what happens if Kevin Love becomes available at some point this season? What happens if Thaddeus Young becomes available? Tristan Thompson becomes available? They'll have to compete with the Lakers for these guys, and probably another team or two. Derek Favors, is he going to last the season in Oklahoma City? Like, there are some guys that I think are going to hit the buyout market that'll fortify that Nets front court to give them, to your point, Rohan, some of the guys up front that can battle the Embiids and some of the other bigs in the NBA. All right, I want to talk about Milwaukee and specifically Giannis. Did anybody pick Giannis for MVP this year? No? Nobody? No?
I don't think he can win. I mean,
you don't think he can win? Well, no, hold, Chris, Harry. I'll let you go first here, but like, he's not only is he doing in the preseason, did he do all the same things we've seen him do, but he shot like 66% from three in the preseason. Now, I don't expect that to translate entirely to the regular season, but this is a guy that works awful hard on that shot. He's done it. Started doing it with Jason Kidd when Sean Sweeney was there working with him. He's done it with Budenholzer and his staff.
The form looked good, too.
Like, if he's...
Form looks great.
Somehow found something, Chris Herring... Like, and he can shoot like 37% from three. Let me take that back.
He can win if statistically he's going to be on a completely different level. He can win. I was just talking about how they could very easily knock off Brooklyn, or maybe not easily, but that they could do it. So obviously, I mean, his team is going to be good enough. Giannis, I mean, as Chris wrote last year, Giannis very easily statistically could have been MVP again last year. I think though for him, there does develop a fatigue, and I don't know how much that came into play last year. I think really, quite frankly, I think the narratives were kind of written early on, and Milwaukee struggled out of the gate. Giannis, you know, was trying to find his place, which is a weird thing to say about a reigning two-time MVP within the way they were running their offense at the beginning of last season. So I kind of think he just kind of got forgotten about at the beginning and then played catch-up and came in. You know, I think Jokic deserved it, but Giannis was not any less deserving than he had been the last couple of years. I just kind of think at this point, we saw it with Jordan. We've seen it with so many other people, LeBron, where you have MVP caliber years and you just don't get it because you're more likely to give it to the guy that kind of, if they don't burst onto the scene, it's that they have a season where there is something that becomes a driving force. In this case, I just tend to think if Embiid plays enough games and the Sixers are a top four seed, that at this point he's positioned himself as the hero, especially after today, in my opinion. So I think it will be his to lose. I think that Luka will be in the conversation if Dallas can somehow finish as, you know, a home court advantage team. I think he would be likely to get it. You know, we heard the take yesterday that the idea of Jokic maybe getting it, where he has a whole season where he's going to kind of carry that load for Jamal Murray. So I could see a number of different guys kind of being just as in that conversation, if not more. And not to mention Donovan Mitchell, if Utah is a number one seed again. I just kind of feel like there's more of an appetite to get it to somebody else. Should it be that way? No. I think he's capable of having a just as good a season, if not better, than the last few. And he has been looking a lot better with the shot, which that could change.
So can I just jump in real quick? To touch on the narrative thing about him not winning it last year, he would have won three in a row after crumbling, his team crumbling in the playoffs and him not winning the championship. He's now come through in the playoffs. He won a finals MVP. So I don't see that. I don't see there being any overexhaustion with voting for him this season. If he averages 29, 10, and 6, the Bucks have the best record in the NBA, and they could because the way they play defense, it's just a steamroller through everybody. I don't know how you don't vote for Giannis. Like, he should be the favorite. I personally, for our exercise, our roundtable, I picked Trae Young because I think
this is a classic Pina move. No,
because it's more. I'm not boring.
Because he wants to have cover. That way, if Trae Young wins, he could have called it. But if Giannis wins, now he could have said he was on it the whole time. No, no, it's really masterful.
Thank
work.
You, Rohan, my therapist. I really appreciate you,
really,
as always.
A really
that was exactly what that sounded like.
Michael Pina.
Pina is more Machiavellian than Ben Simmons, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I picked Trae Young, but... Let me, if I could just interrupt Mike, as I do on open floor on a weekly basis. I'll just throw in, to Chris's point, I think whether or not Giannis wins MVP because of the narrative, et cetera, is beside the point. I think the point is, like, are we kind of sleeping on him? As I know we put him at number two on our top 100 list, and, you know.
I put him at number one on mine.
That's true.
So I don't have any issues with him, but I think other people do hate seeing repeats.
Right. To Mannix's point, I think that there's maybe not enough talk about the Bucks. Now, part of that is because their playoff run was at time underwhelming. You know, I joked about it, but it did really look like Mike Budenholzer, two games into that Nets series, was going to be replaced. This team looked like they were maybe headed for a massive overhaul. So yeah,
Rick Carlisle was like looking at property in Milwaukee.
Yeah, he had a lake house in Madison.
Yeah, yeah, that was accurate.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think that they got a little fortunate with injury luck as well, but I do think that finals run unlocks something for Milwaukee, unlocks something for Giannis. And the confidence I think they'll be coming back with now, I do think they're maybe being overlooked a little bit as a title contender.
Beck?
So I think Herring and I both picked Embiid in our preseason roundtable to win MVP, and some of the reasons that Chris named, which is that, you know, Philly could still have a phenomenal season if and when they trade Ben Simmons. And yes, Embiid will be the reason. He just has to stay healthy. If he stays healthy, Embiid was, you know, he was a distant two last year behind Jokic, but he did finish second. And if he has that kind of season again, plays more games, and the Sixers will be perceived to have overachieved in the light of all the dysfunction, then he has a strong case. With Giannis, like I always tend to, this is me being a little defensive on behalf of NBA media and voters, I kind of don't buy the fatigue argument that people throw out, including amongst our own ranks, every year. It's not so much that. It is a case, though, that if you've already won it a couple times, the gauge is no longer Giannis versus Jokic and Embiid and Curry and whoever. It's Giannis versus Giannis. And so if we've already seen you be like just off the charts spectacular and your team had the best record, we gave you MVP. You earned MVP. You won the award. So what's the bar now? If you do the exact same thing, it's just kind of hard to distinguish. So it's not so much fatigue as, okay, but there has to be like an encore almost. And Shaq only won one MVP back in the day, in large part because he would fall back from his own lofty stats. The blocks per game or the rebounds would dip, and all of a sudden be like, well, you weren't as dominant this year. And that hurts him. And the Lakers, like a lot of champions, would usually have fewer wins after the championship. So with the Bucks, that's kind of what I'm expecting. I think they will probably, it's not a championship hangover as much as it is a confidence that tells you, we don't have to go all out in the regular season. We're playing for June. And we're not going to burn ourselves out in the meantime. We don't need home court advantage throughout the playoffs because we have the confidence of a champion. And because of that, your record dips a little bit. And most of us, I think, who vote for MVP, as you guys know, I always weigh the record heavily. I'm not voting for a guy who's on a sixth place team. You got to be top three or four at minimum. I'm not saying the Bucks are going to fall below that range, but I don't think they're going to win 60 games necessarily as the defending champs. History says that they'll probably fall back a little bit from their winning percentage from last season, and that could depress Giannis's candidacy. That said, if Mannix is right and that three-point shooting translates or carries into the regular season and we see a different version of Giannis, going back to my thing about, well, okay, the bar is yourself now. Well, if he's a new and improved, even more dominant, incredible Giannis, that will get everybody's attention in a different way and also might boost their win total.
So yeah. Real quick, sorry, Mannix.
No, good.
You mentioned Shaq, and I don't want to compare the two exclusively, but Giannis's approach to basketball in his career is slightly more intense than Shaquille O'Neal's was during his prime MVP years. Howard, I have this question for you. You talk about being an MVP candidate and kind of comparing yourself against the field, comparing yourself against yourself historically as a player. How much of it do you think in the eyes of, and I'm asking you to speak for all people who have a vote right now, so do your best. But how much of it is a reticence on behalf of voters to not want to, for example, giving Nikola Jokic two in a row, comparing that to, okay, Shaq had one, Kobe Bryant had one, Kevin Garnett had one. So how could we as voters look at NBA history and then suddenly give Nikola Jokic two MVPs? Wouldn't that be ridiculous? Do you think that that factors into it at all?
Oh, for Howard, it does. Yes, it factors in for you. We've had this argument in the past. Yes, no. We have discussed this. You consider the three-peat for Giannis as being a variable in this.
I considered it a variable for the masses in general, which would probably include myself, but I wasn't saying that I personally thought that he had to do something different to win a third in a row because three was a special honor. I do think psychologically that one, like, that's a distinction beyond the other distinctions, because three in a row has rarely been achieved. But to answer Pina's question, like, is Steph Curry going to finish when we do the top 75 and everything else? Steph Curry's not going to be ahead of Shaq or Kobe. But Steph Curry got back-to-back MVPs, including the first ever unanimous MVP. That, to me, disproves the notion that we're worried about Steph somehow looking historically like he was better than Kobe or Shaq because they only got one each and all this stuff. Like, no, it didn't hurt Steph Curry. It didn't hurt Steve Nash getting back-to-back. And no one is going to say that Steve Nash was better than Shaq and Kobe for the course of their careers. So, no, I don't think it hurts that. I think when we have these discussions in October, we sometimes put up these barriers like, oh, Jokic can't win it again because of all these things. What happens is the players take over. Like, we're responding. The narrative, as people put it, is not us. We perceive it and we maybe frame it a little bit. But the players create and the teams create the narrative. If Jokic goes out this season and just destroys people, even without Jamal Murray, and they have the best record in the NBA, which is altogether possible, by the way, if the Nuggets have the, like, win 65 games, I'm going to go crazy here, 65 games, best record in the league by far, Jokic increases his numbers even beyond last season's, it's going to be really hard to deny him, especially depending on, well, but also depending on how those other candidates we've talked about do. But the player sometimes makes it, like, unmistakable. And that's the thing. When you've already won it, making it unmistakable just requires a little bit more sometimes, right? That's what I mean about the bar.
Yeah. Giannis could have shot 80% from three. You weren't voting for him last year.
Come on.
Really nice, okay. Just kidding. Just so flustered right now. So flustered right now. All right, let's move on. I want to talk about a couple other things. The New York Knicks, and Chris Herring, I'll turn to you first as our resident Knicks expert. By the way, pick up Chris's book on the 1990s Knicks, Blood in the Garden, which you can order right now. I'm bullish on the Knicks, Chris. Howard and I talked about this on the pod last week. I was in Vegas recently, and the over-under for Knicks wins was 41.5. And I'm like, they won 41 games last year. And they added Kemba Walker. And they added Evan Fournier. They improved in areas they needed to improve. Now, I'm not going to make any illusions about what kind of defensive player Evan Fournier is. And it remains to be seen just how healthy Kemba Walker is going to be. But just natural improvements from RJ Barrett and the collection of young players the Knicks have. Derrick Rose coming back for another healthy season. I think the Knicks are I guess the question is, what tier do you put the Knicks on in the Eastern Conference?
I think they're in that second wave. I think the question is, like, how many teams are in that second wave? I don't even know where you would put Philly. You know, in a normal situation, if Simmons were there and there weren't those issues, but I guess you've got Brooklyn. And you've certainly got Milwaukee there. Michael, I think, sounds like he would have Brooklyn and then everybody else. I think the Knicks are probably at the back end of that second wave. And the weird thing is that them, and I think a couple other teams in the East, I think the Bulls are one of them, where you get people that have them ranging anywhere from, like, you know, maybe as high as third or fourth, which that seems a little high to me. But you have some people that think, you know, including the 538 model, I don't have to defend it, maybe as vigorously as before. I never did really defend it, even when I was there before. But it has them out of the playoffs. That, you know, could it happen? Maybe it has the Lakers out of the playoffs, too, which that's the one that really is. I don't see that one. But anyway, looking at the Knicks, I think what's interesting is that they could be a lower seed than they were last year and still be a better team. First of all, I think once you've made the playoffs after that long of a layoff, you're happy just to get back. But I think at this point, you want to get further than you did last year. That's the priority, I think. The roster that they built, certainly losing Elfrid Payton, getting Kemba Walker, getting Evan Fournier, I think certainly addresses some of the stuff that was wrong last year. There's all the reason in the world to think that the Knicks might regress. Julius Randle shot like crazy. The stat that still is crazy to me, I think of the 13 guys that saw the biggest jump in volume three-point shooting, the Knicks had four of those guys in the league. And they were like number two, number three, number nine, and number 12, you know, in terms of the biggest jumps they saw. It was Rose, Bullock, RJ, and Julius. So they're two best players included in that. So they could certainly regress, but I think the one thing that I would hold out hope for if I'm a Knicks fan is that you also recognize that Julius Randle and RJ Barrett had much tougher shots last year as the guys that had to have the ball in their hands. Now you add in a couple of guys that can handle the ball in the starting lineup, you would hope that those shots become easier for them. So maybe they regress a little bit from last year, which was a crazy year. And people have questions about the sight lines and the empty arenas and everything. Maybe that's part of it. But I don't think they're going to fall off that hard because they have a good defense that should be consistent. And defense will help you be consistent at times where your jump shot maybe isn't falling. So I like them. I just don't know if I like them enough to have them in the top four, top five necessarily. But they still could very easily advance further than they did in the playoffs last year.
I'm completely I'm on the record here. I'm completely in disagreement. I don't want to step on one of my hot takes. I have several, so it's okay. They're in the chamber. But the New York Knicks making the playoffs, like I wouldn't be surprised if they did not make the playoffs this season. Like,
Not the playoffs or not the play-in? Are they below 10?
No, you can make the play-in and lose and then not make the playoffs.
Okay. So they're in the 7-10 range possible.
Yeah. They could be the 7 and then not make the playoffs. Yes,
okay, gotcha. I just
clarify that. You know, you cited a lot of my argument for me, Chris, so thank you.
Damn, did I do that bad a job of making my argument? I think, no.
you were too nuanced, Chris.
I mean, Julius Randle, him making second team All-NBA, that's just never going to ever happen again. The 40% on pull-up threes, that's
outrageous. And Knicks fans call me the hater. My God.
If you watch his entire career up until last season, it's just like he was a completely different player. I just don't think any of that's sustainable. I think the opposing three-point percentage opponents were like 4% below league average against the Knicks, the best three-point defense in the league. Don't see that being the same thing carrying over into this year with Kemba Walker playing minutes, with Evan Fournier playing minutes. Your identity was defense. That's how you won basketball games last season. So, I like the contract that Kemba has. I like the contract that Fournier has for the Knicks, I suppose. But, like, I think how it mutates who you are as a basketball team will be very difficult for them to overcome. And, frankly, a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference got a lot better. So, yeah, the Knicks are just, you know, they're not the dumpster fire that they've been for almost my entire lifetime. But not making the playoffs, it wouldn't shock me given everything that Chris said on my behalf or my argument.
Here's what I'll say in Mike's defense here of the take is that the Bulls got a lot better. I think people are expecting a lot of improvement for a team like Charlotte, for example, if LaMelo Ball can make another leap. I think the real elephant in the room are Boston and Miami. I think both underachieved greatly last year. I think both of those teams improved in the offseason, particularly Boston. I think is like primed to take a huge leap in the East, and I'm surprised they're not kind of talked about at the top of that second wave. As Herring described, I love the pickups they made in the offseason. So you're looking at, you know, many teams right there, four, in fact, that finished behind New York that I think are going to give them a lot better competition this year. However, in Chris Herring's defense, I will say for the majority of his career, the hallmark of every Tom Thibodeau team is how much they overachieve in the regular season. He will have those guys playing every minute of every game harder than practically every other team in the NBA. And I think that's what he hangs his hat on. And Mike mentioned the defense. Listen, He makes it work. He makes it work. I mean, outside of his Minnesota stint where, you know, things kind of went haywire, he cobbles it together. The fact that he's proven even in this new NBA, how many years it's been since he's been a head coach, he can put together a defense. That is why I think I lean closer to Herring, and that I do see them sneaking in, because I think they're going to take the regular season more seriously than some of these other teams. And that's just the hallmark of their coach. They overachieve in that regard.
I thought you were going to say that he plays them every minute of every game and just leave the sentence at that, because it would have been accurate. Right. Yeah. I was ready for that.
RJ Barrett will play 46 minutes a night if that's what it takes.
I'm pretty sure they led the preseason in minutes too. I think they were like they might have been the only two players in the league that were over 30 minutes.
He had a starter. Are you guys like the minutes police here too? Because I can't join the minutes police.
We're just pointing out facts.
Like, it's always been misleading with Tibbs, though. Like, his practices never run super... Like, Stan Van Gundy used to run, like, two-hour shoot-arounds. Like, it was wild watching him do that stuff. Like, Tibbs' practices weren't, like, the most grueling thing in the world. Yeah, he reinserting Julius Randle into a fourth quarter of a preseason game is a little bonkers, but...
Listen, I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that it's a fact that he pushes his teams harder. And to his credit, they always win more games than people expect. So it's not a criticism, but
I just,
the truth.
But I would say this, like what Tibbs did was so remarkable in large part because the roster did not change that much from pre-Tibbs to year one of Tibbs, right? So you go from crap defense to top five or wherever they finished. That's so much about the culture and the accountability that you instilled. That's all credit to Tibbs and to the players to some extent for doing it, right? So that said, this is not a team of great defenders necessarily. And one of the reasons that he was force feeding a player that Knicks fans hated, Elfrid Payton, into the lineup over and over and over again was because of Payton's defense. You've replaced him with Kemba Walker, who has a bad knee and was a turnstile on defense, even in his youth with good knees. And Evan Fournier, not known for defense. So you've, and they've lost Reggie Bullock. So you've essentially replaced two guards who were plus defenders with two guards who are minus defenders. So there's that part of it. You're not putting that much more pressure on your back line. How much more, speaking of all the minutes that Taj Gibson has played in the course of his career for Tibbs over three different teams, how much more can you squeeze out of Taj Gibson and Derrick Rose? And Gibson was pretty important to them last season. Mitchell Robinson and Nerlens Noel, their other two bigs, are constantly hurt. So there's just a lot of potential trouble spots. It doesn't mean that they'll be bad. I'm just saying there's a lot of reasons to be concerned if you're the Knicks. I also think, as a couple of you have alluded to, though this almost never happens, I feel like the entire East got better. I mean, it's hard to pick a team that does not look better. And, you know, we'll get into the season and we'll be wrong on some of these. But right now, like, Charlotte looks like they should be better. Washington should be better. Toronto will definitely be better. Indiana, just by having Rick Carlisle instead of a crazy coach, will
healthy
be better.
Silver, yeah.
Miami, not being wrecked by COVID, will be better, and they picked up Lowry. Boston, without being wrecked by COVID and other things, will be better. So it's just going to be harder, and I said this on the crossover last week. The Knicks are better on paper, but they will be lower in the standings. I don't know how much lower. I'm not as pessimistic as Pina. I'm not knocking them out of the playoffs, but I do think it's possible for them to sink to play in range, probably like 7 or 8. And yeah, now all of a sudden you are vulnerable to not make the playoffs.
It was really hilarious, by the way. You know, do or die moment in a playoff game, fourth quarter, you know, Trae Young's getting the ball and both Taj Gibson and Derrick Rose are on the floor. I just, Tibbs, man, the loyalty he shows, it's really something.
I mean, is there a team in the league that would have signed Taj Gibson last year?
No, but everybody loves Taj.
He was kind of floating around, though.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
He could have signed him. So,
listen, we're going to be doing this podcast in 2030. Tibbs is going to be coaching the Memphis Grizzlies, and Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson are going to be in the opening night lineup, along with Luol Deng.
Yeah.
Hey, Taylor Jenks is a lifer down there. What are you talking about? Like, he's there for fun. I'm taking the Knicks to the 4 seed this year. I'm going right now. I think they win.
Wow.
I'm telling you. I think they're the 4 seed and they lose once again in the first round because, Rohan, to your point, they play harder than everybody in the regular season. Teams do not play hard in the regular season. The Knicks do. And how they got overwhelmed by Atlanta in part was Trae Young being awesome, but in part because Atlanta played hard. Like, they were in the playoffs and they were playing hard. The Knicks, Like the work ethic evens out in the postseason. They have an advantage in the regular season, but the work ethic, it just evens out. So I'm going four seed.
Not. Four seed is absurd. That's ridiculous.
Save the tape. Save the tape.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
The only thing I think that we haven't taken into account that I think can be a difference maker. I know all the teams kind of gradually got fans back at the end of last season. That idea of that arena being full and loud.
If there was
one thing that actually surprised me, Atlanta obviously had more talent. I immediately apologized to Michael for being wrong. That I thought that would be the best series of the ones in the first round, and it was obviously one of the most lopsided ones in terms of talent. That arena is loud as hell, and the fact that they were winning games before there were fans in that arena and before the arena was full makes me think that with an arena that's going to be loud and probably more passionate than it's been in a long time for a full season.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. You know what? As someone who lived in New York for 4 years and now lives in Los Angeles, let me just say something, okay? New York is not special. Maybe the water helps for the bagels, but it doesn't help for the fans, okay? Let me tell you something. Every arena is going to be loud. Toronto's going to be loud. Miami's going to be loud. Boston is going to be loud. Okay, Los Angeles is going to be loud, maybe less so for Clippers games, but the in-arena entertainment's always way too loud there. But
oh, come on, Rowan! Like New York, that's the best home court advantage of the NBA.
Listen, they have a great crowd. I'm not trying to deny their great crowd. I just don't think it's like, listen, they lost a home playoff game, right? Like it's not like they're unbeatable there. Or some kind of, you know, I'll take Denver's home court advantage in the mile high altitude over New York. How about that?
That's fair. No, it's a different sort of advantage, but I'll give you that. Yeah. I don't know. It may not make a difference at all, but I just kind of feel like it. There's a possibility there that the other reason that I don't think they'll regress like crazy is that I do think that that's an advantage that they'll be able to use. That I thought it was actually interesting that they were going to try to make more use of. All of a sudden, they won that one game in the series, and immediately they're like, you know what, screw it. They had the vaccinated section and the unvaccinated section, and they're like, we're gonna get rid of the unvaccinated section. You can't be unvaccinated. We're just gonna make it vaccinated only so we can have a full arena. And it seemed like they knew what they were doing with that, both for health reasons but also from the standpoint of just like they knew that they could use that to their advantage in a way that other teams were not going to be able to.
Let me just real quick say as somebody who's lived in New York now for 17 years, Rohan, and to borrow from the legendary Marcellus Wallace, you're not welcome in the 212 anymore. You lost all your New York privileges. Be gone, okay. You stay gone.
Okay, that's listen, all. Man. In February, when I'm walking outside in shorts, I'm not going to be, you know, I won't all be upset.
Because you can't take it here. Because you can't take it here.
Exactly. Thank you.
I'm gonna have t-shirts made for all you guys. Just say four seed across the front.
Oh, yeah.
In orange and blue.
Yeah.
All right. Last topic here on the Eastern Conference. Outside of the top tier teams that we're talking about, give me a team that you're bullish on. Somebody that maybe we're not talking about all that much. Rohan, we'll start with you.
Well, we haven't talked about them too much on this podcast specifically. I think people in general are bullish on them. I'm going to go with the Hawks, who I think could finish as high as the 3 seed. Maybe I'll make 3 seed shirts in red, yellow, and black just to one-up Mannix here. But I think Atlanta, I picked Nate McMillan as my coach of the year candidate. I think they went 27-11 with him down the stretch. Obviously, they made it all the way to the conference finals. Again, it's very hard to put last season into the proper context. I don't know how many conclusions you can really draw from it. Obviously, the end of the regular season was crazy, and their playoff run, they had their own fortunes, et cetera. At the same time, I just think they have one of the best balanced rosters in the league. They have an outstanding bread and butter in Trae Young pick and rolls. You can run them with Capella or Collins. And then they have just a, you know, bounty of 3-and-D guys or shooters or wing players they can throw out there between DeAndre Hunter. We saw Cam Reddish looked great in the playoffs, if that's real at all. Kevin Huerter, obviously Bogdan Bogdanovich. So I just think that they're built both for regular season success and, as you've seen, playoff success. Trae Young's still very young. I think he has room to improve as a playmaker, shot selection, et cetera. He can only get better. So I think the Hawks, who we're not necessarily sleeping on, I think they come up in discussions, but they're, I think, a team that could make noise again if they're able to build on the momentum they had in the playoffs.
So, real quick, Rohan, you would say that the Hawks have a 0% chance of winning the championship?
A 0% chance? What? No,
I yeah, well, yeah, no, but this is a non-title. This is the, we're picking teams that are non-title that we're bullish on. So there's a 0% chance that the Hawks can win the championship.
No, I'm giving them. Did Mannix say they have a 0% chance? Was that the?
No, I'm saying that.
No, I think they have a chance. I'll give them a chance.
Okay, so then you failed this category.
No. You're about to give an awful take. You're about to pick some stupid team. Oh God! No! Just let him go next. He's gonna say something so annoying now. Let's go, Pino. Who do you
got? Okay, so my team, which actually follows the rules of the exercise.
When did he say they couldn't win the title?
In the Google Doc rundown that we had for this show, point out, because I'm about accuracy here, it actually said pick a non-title team in the East you're most bullish on, and you picked the Hawks. So I understand where Pino's coming from on it, even if he's ball busting a little bit too hard.
I've never read an email Mannix has ever sent me. B.
I think Pina wrote this.
C. It wasn't me.
I did. Exactly. Just Rohan. Just please be quiet for 2 seconds. Okay. So, I'm picking my team, the Toronto Raptors. I think that is. Thank you. I heard a
groan. That was my pick too. Go ahead.
Toronto is obviously last year was the season from hell for them playing in Florida. They lose Kyle Lowry, but they still have so much talent on this team. And OG Anunoby is positioned to make a leap. I saw Tom Ziller in his fantastic email newsletter is predicting that OG Anunoby will make the All-Star team. I'm not that bullish on OG, but I love everything about him as someone who can guard five positions. And he's really looked frisky. In the preseason, offensively, playmaking, all that sort of stuff. They still have Fred VanVleet. Pascal Siakam could not be any worse. I see him being bouncing back. Nick Nurse is still the head coach. They have such a versatile roster. They can play so many different types of lineups. Scotty Barnes just looks like someone who's like going to be able, as a rookie, play 30 competent minutes of NBA defense, frenetic defense. And honestly, if Goran Dragic is healthy and the Raptors are too good at the deadline to move him for spare parts. Like, I think the Raptors have just like a lot of good vibes potentially going for them.
Where do they finish? What seed are you giving them?
I don't know, man. Like, if they were sixth, I wouldn't bat an eye. Like, that seems fair.
Dragic, by the way, Dragic is really good. Like, I'm not convinced the Heat got like markedly better by flipping Lowry for Dragic there. Like, I think that if I don't know if he lasts the season there, I think Masai is going to do everything possible to trade him for things that he can use down the line. But he's going to be productive there, that's for sure.
Harry, yeah, I
steal your
the
guy,
same.
So you can jump on that one too.
I picked them too. I mean, I don't have much more to add than what he said. I guess I'm sounding like a broken record as far as home court advantage. I mean, if you're going to talk about a team that gets more of one than the Knicks will or did. I think it's Toronto that actually gets to play in the country that their team is based in. That really was a year from hell in every regard. And I think that I don't know if all the players, you know, move their families down to Tampa with them. But if they didn't, I imagine that makes a big difference just as far as comfort, as far as the sort of reception they'll get from their own fans. From that standpoint, I think it's a team that it's very easy to see, and not to mention that their young guys always seem to improve by leaps and bounds, sometimes to the extent to where we might develop unreasonable expectations for how much they'll keep improving. Like I think was the case with Siakam. He was bad last year, but you know, not all growth is linear. And even with OG for a while, I think we saw that when he got hurt. So I just think that there's so much potential there. How good they are, I'm not quite sure, but if they were to make the playoffs, it would not completely surprised me at all.
Siakam's interesting though. Like, I'm not convinced he like figures it out. It was like March of 2020 when he just forgot how to shoot, or whatever it was, or February. Like he like the first month of that season, the 1920 season, he was like he looked like an MVP candidate, and then the shooting fell off a cliff, and it hasn't come back since. So I don't know. Like he's such a good player. I hope he gets it back, but I'm not convinced yet that it's definitely going to come back. Howard, what do you say?
Speaking as a fellow shoulder surgery patient, I wish Siakam well in his recovery. I had thought about Toronto as well, so I put down a second team just in case. The Wizards! The Wizards. We have barely talked about the Wizards.
I love it.
That's a good one.
Bradley Beal's got a really nice cast around him now. And no, you lose star power with Westbrook, but you gain all of this flexibility and cohesion. So Dinwiddie and Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, KCP, Hachimura, Bertans, Gafford, Thomas Bryant, Avdija. Yes, I just named almost the entire roster because they're like two to almost three deep at a lot of positions in an era where having that positional flexibility really matters. I just think that, you know, they're not going to challenge for a top four seed in the East. I think they do threaten the playoff field at least. And I just like where they're positioned now, because if there's an opportunity to make other moves, they've got a lot more flexibility. But I also just think competitively, they'll be a lot better. So the Wizards, to go back to the actual script that we were supposed to be following from Rohan, the non-title team I'm most bullish on, probably the Wizards. I will say, because Rohan focused on the Hawks, my boldest take, that the item that we're probably not getting to, so I'm just going to shoehorn it in anyway, the Hawks are going to win the East in the regular season.
Wow.
They're going to have the best.
Oh. Wow.
I'm not saying they're going to the finals. The Hawks are going to have the best record. They're incredibly deep. They're young. They're spry. They're still hungry. They'll want regular season wins. The Bucks, as I said before, I think will maybe take a step back as defending champs. The Nets are going to deal with injuries almost inevitably, plus the Kyrie crap. The Sixers are too goofy. Like, there's no team that, like, it is not only capable of but wants the top seed. I think the Hawks, with Trae Young and the swagger that he brings to the court, that I think infuses that whole team, the Hawks will have the best record in the regular season.
I'll just throw this
out
there.
That's fascinating,
man. That's a good take. I'm just going to throw this out there, though. The Hawks are a non-title team, okay? They're not winning the championship. So my answer totally fits within the parameters of this question. No one here is picking the Hawks, okay? They're not going to win.
Can I respond to Howard really quickly? I know we're probably way out of time at this point. Mm-hmm. I would be more surprised with the Hawks being the one seed than I would them winning the East and for like to make the finals, I think.
Wow.
I think that they actually would do that before they'd finish as the one seed. Huh. And I just think, I don't know. I could see them regressing a little bit in the regular season, which will sound nonsensical because I know they had bad injuries last year, but I also think that their injuries helped them a little bit at times too, because they have so much talent on that roster that I think, frankly, Lloyd Pierce didn't know how to really actually use the rotation all the way. And, you know, maybe Nate McMillan is better with that, but I think it actually helped kind of solidify, okay, here's who we're going with because we're injured, so we have to go with this. Like, I think it kind of simplified the stuff for them a little bit. They've got so many guys. Their owner even was honest about the fact, he's like, I don't know that we're going to be able to pay to keep all these guys. And at some point, they won't be. But I think that they've just got so much talent, which is a good problem to have. I just wonder if it kind of bumps into each other and if egos take over at any point. I don't know. DeAndre, but I would be surprised if they win the one seed. I think it'll be Milwaukee just because they generally have so much cushion from everybody else, too. I know Brooklyn is there now, so maybe not. But that would be something.
Well, DeAndre Hunter coming back for Atlanta's big. Like, that guy was
huge.
Not really a factor for them in the playoffs. He's legit. So
can I just?
I think one of the negatives on the Hawks, I would just say quickly, is they're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. I think they snuck up on teams for most of last season. Like, after they got off that sluggish start, they fired Lloyd. Teams are going to be ready for them this year. And I'm curious to see how Trae Young adjusts to the new rules, like where he's not going to get called for. He's not going to get to the free throw line as often as he did when he's hurling his body into players. Like, that's, I watched in the preseason, like, there was that viral clip of Steph Curry throwing himself into somebody's body and then not getting called. Like, you know, referees are taking this seriously. They're taking this seriously right now. Rohan, you want to add something quickly before
I just want to say to Howard, Wizards sneaky one of the best off seasons, picking up Dinwiddie to sub in for Westbrook. Pina thinks that's an upgrade, but getting three rotation players back in that trade, KCP, Montrezl Harrell, and Kuzma, I think all can contribute right away. Sneaky great offseason for Washington. I think they're going to have a lot of depth and a lot better season.
Yeah, Kuzma's just happy to be out of Los Angeles. I don't think anyone wanted out as much as he did out of that situation. My team, and just want to let you guys know as I say this, there is room for you on the Buzz bandwagon.
Oh,
there
God.
Is room for you on the Charlotte Hornets bandwagon. I want to take you back to March of 2020. My years blend together. Last March. The Hornets were right around 500 before LaMelo Ball goes down with an injury. Then Gordon Hayward goes down with an injury and the wheels kind of fall off the wagon. But that was a good team last March. And LaMelo Ball is the real deal. This guy in year two is going to be even better than he was in year one. Gordon Hayward is an excellent fit next to that team. They add James Bouknight, who, like LaMelo, needs another, you know, fast, twitchy wing that can, you know, catch his lobs. I think this team is going to be at worst a 6 or 7 seed this year.
Can you just run down your East rankings for us? Because you got the Knicks at 4. You got Charlotte at
bullish.
6 or 7.
You're more bullish on the Celtics than I am. I think the Celtics are going to have playmaker problems. I need to see more of the Marcus Smart, Dennis Schroeder backcourt with Peyton Pritchard, and Aaron Nesmith looks pretty good, but and Romeo Langford, like, those guys are gonna have to show me first before I buy into the Celtics. I think James Borrego is gonna be the coach of the year. I think that is a rising team that showed glimpses of it before injuries completely screwed them up, and if they can stay healthy this year, I think they're gonna be really good. I think that's
Can I real quick to kind of bring this full circle, throw my favorite Ben Simmons fake trade out there that kind of ties us all together. Ben Simmons to the Charlotte Hornets for Gordon Hayward and Miles Bridges. What do you guys think of that?
That is inspired work. That is inspired work, Pina.
That would be a fun ass team to watch in terms of fast breaks, though.
That
my goodness, they're already
that
fun to watch.
That would be really interesting
for both sides. If you're Charlotte, do you want to take the ball out of LaMelo's hands as much as you would with Simmons out there?
He's a power forward.
I think you can play him
at the five.
I think wherever
Charlotte
Simmons
too.
Goes next, he's got to play power forward or center. I think that's
But he's not going to play that offensively. Like, he's going to. You know, as much as Ben Simmons gets criticized, again, we really are coming full circle there. As much as he gets criticized, like, he's great in the open floor. He's like, you want the ball in his hands in transition. So I think you need to put him, I wouldn't put him in that Charlotte situation, not with LaMelo there, and he is how good he is with the ball in his hands.
But that's the tricky part here. And this, by the way, bring it full circle, this is why it's so hard to make a trade. It's not just what Daryl Morey is holding out for. It's how many teams feel like they can fit Ben Simmons in and not have him clash with Damian Lillard or whoever your primary ball handler is, and trying to figure out, well, if Ben Simmons comes here, is he going to be willing to play in a slightly less primary role, less of a playmaker role? What is he ultimately if he's not going to be a shooter and have the ball in his hands all the time? Like, that's a difficult fit for a lot of teams. So it doesn't mean he's not really valuable, especially defensively and as a playmaker. But any team that wants to trade for him has to consider all of these other issues. And I think that feeds into these trade discussions as well.
I just want Joel Embiid to do media every day. Joel Embiid is like the new Shaq. Like, Howard, you covered Shaq back in the day. It's like you just like waited breathlessly to see what Shaq would say about a situation. Like, Joel Embiid is that guy. Like, you never know what he's going to say.
Not quite as big of like a, you know, prankster, jokester, clown. Like, he has those moments, but in terms of like being willing to say what's on his mind and just throw it down, hell yes. And I've made the comparison myself, so I agree. Thank God for Joel Embiid. He's keeping us all gainfully employed.
No question. All right, great job, guys. Check out Michael, Rohan, and Chris over on the Open Floor Podcast. Subscribe to that feed. And next week, we will all be back in our respective corners doing our respective things.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.